Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
All right, a lot happening on the PM team. It's a hump day edition of the show. We just talked to Tyler Kennedy, just shooting the breeze. I feel like, Donnie, we've really developed a nice rapport with TK. We can have him on and just talk shop about whatever. Pretty much just throw out anything, even barely hockey-related, if that, and he's got a take. And from that kind of well, we now might have a golf challenge here lined up.
And he called it out to you.
Yeah, it felt like I don't know if he intended it. I'm not going to try to make this mano a mano. I don't know if he intended it to me specifically or if he said we, like people from the fan and him, like me and one other person.
Nah, I think he meant you, Malzy.
You think it was a one-on-one?
TK and Malzy.
So I looked him up now.
And I've already got a text out to Paul Nussbaum, who runs Going Low.
Yeah, I'm gonna message TK on Twitter probably. I checked him out on the Handicap app because he's a member there. So the USGA Handicap Index thing. He's a 13.2, but he hasn't posted in several years. And I think last year, I was talking to our boss, Craig, about this, because you know Craig's thinking of one seven-letter word when he hears this, content, baby. And he said, I think that TK was having some knee issues that he had to get like a little bit of surgery done maybe last year, but now it sounds like he's healthy and ready to roll. He's a 13.2. I'm a 14.3, Donnie. But my number, I think, is going to keep coming down because I got a feeling the next couple rounds I play, I'm going to be playing reasonably well. I'm in that locked-in mode. We got to make it happen. I'll play them $20 a side. I'd even throw it out there. I'd go as high as $50 a side. A $50 Nassau, which is a lot of money. I could lose $150. But I would do it. For the content, baby. Content is king. Mainly because I want to play that golf course, too.
Well, yeah, that's what his home course, he said.
Yeah, I feel like TK, very fun hang on the course. I bet you the transfusions are out early. And here's the thing about hockey players. They've got two things that like your average citizen probably doesn't have unless they played baseball. Forearm strength to hit the ball far, because you've got to have strong forearms to just play hockey, period. And then hip strength. All the two parts of the body, if you want to hit a golf ball very far and reasonably straight, you got to have strength, forearms and hips. So I'm working at a physical disadvantage here, but I'm not too concerned about it, Donnie, because I'm feeling great about the old golf swing right now. I am. But you can tell already I'm talking about it too much. I got to get out there and prove it. If I talk about it anymore, I'm going to end up playing poorly the next time I'm out there. ESPN, I don't know if you saw this. Jeremy Fowler, I think, did this. We know Jeremy very well. We're big fans of his. Adam Schefter 2.0 in the making. He's on the rise there, Jeremy is, for sure. He, and I think they overall, ranked. They did a piece where they just ranked the top 10 edge rushers in the league. Where do you think TJ Watt fell on the old list?
Third.
No, higher. He was number two.
Ooh.
Behind?
Mean Miles.
Yes. Top five looked like this. Garrett one, Watt two, Parsons three.
And then Max Crosby.
Nick Bosa four, and Crosby five. Bosa was the one who had dropped. He was ranked number one when they did this last year. A lot of nice words said, quite honestly, about TJ Watt in this. I read it. It's not. They certainly did not short shrift him. They did not dog him. This was Jeremy Fowler had the story. Execs, coaches, scouts. So this is the people inside the game. These are people who get paid to make personnel decisions. What they wrote about Garrett, he's in tier one by himself, got 70% of first place votes. Quote, if you don't double him, he's going to bleeping kill you. Quote, I don't think he's changed at all. He just got more help in 2023, which accentuated his play. He's always been the same dominant guy. On TJ Watt, they said, quote, one voter called him, quote, the Aaron Donald of pass rushers. He should top everybody's lists. Quote, can't be labeled a high motor guy. He's just exceptionally hard to block, probably the hardest in the league. He has technique, power, counters, violence, bend, everything you want. So it's not like TJ Watt is getting crapped on here by anybody. He jumped up two spots from last year's ranking. Nobody ranked him lower than fifth. Nobody ranked Garrett lower than third. So Watt's up there in pretty rarefied air. He and Garrett are pretty clearly 1-2 here.
I feel like
pretty
the,
solidly.
Yeah, and I feel like the top four is pretty hard to argue, and normally number five is Crosby.
I think there's a drop-off after five. I think there's a top four. There's a guy who kind of exists in his own separate plane here, yeah. And then there's a drop. Because Aiden Hutchinson, six. I really like Aiden Hutchinson. He's not in that class.
Danielle Hunter,
seven. Here, let's see if you can get the last three. So give me 8, 9, 10. See if you can go in order. 8, 9, 10.
Did they have Hendrickson up there?
Hendrickson is 9. So you've got 8 and 10 left. I could give you a hint about one of the players that's on this grouping, but it would give it away instantly. Ooh, listen to the gears turning here.
Yeah, so we already have the top five established.
Mm-hmm.
You said Hutchinson was 6.
Hutchinson's 6. Danielle Hunter's 7. Hendrickson's 9th. So you need 8 and 10.
8 and 10.
Mm-hmm. Got it in front of me right now.
They probably wouldn't have like Matt Judon that high.
No, they do not. He is not even in the group of guys as honorable mentions. He's in also receiving votes, which also was a place where Alex Highsmith found himself. Also receiving votes. Like when Pitt would be near the top 25 in football, they'd be an also receiving votes team.
Hassan Reddick?
No. He's in an honorable mention category. I'll give you number
Mac up there.
No, honorable mention. Josh Hines Allen. He changed his name. Did you see that? Josh Allen, the pass rusher, is now Josh Hines Allen. And then number 10 is Brian Burns.
Okay. That would have been my next guess, but I'd already failed on three of them.
So my thought on this is just really quick. I was looking at it. You probably know this, but 8 out of the 10 highest paid guys on the Steelers in terms of cap hit are defensive players. The two guards that they have that are experienced are the only two offensive players in there. Question, TJ Watt ranks 2nd among all edge rushers by executives. Football people basically said this guy and Myles Garrett are 1-2, except he's number 2 this year and Garrett's number 1. How good does the Steelers defense have to be this coming season? 4-1-2. 9, 2, 8, 9, 3, 70. 8 out of the 10 highest paid, biggest cap hits on this team are on the defensive side of the football. They aren't paying their quarterbacks anything. They have a very young, by and large, skill cast that's still not getting paid yet. How good does this defense need to be? Because I have some thoughts on that I want to share coming up next. 412-928-9370. That's the fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Also, did TJ Watt being ranked 2nd by this group of executives among edge rushers, I'll throw this open again because I just love doing it. Did he get jobbed and disrespected at the expense of Myles Garrett being played?
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Placed ahead of him. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. I'm a complete golf sicko. Ever since TK Tyler Kennedy 45 or a half hour ago threw down what Donnie considers a direct one-to-one challenge to me. I've been starting to I don't even know what Neville Wood looks like. I've never been on the grounds, but I'm starting to visualize shots, Donnie. A nice soft draw off the tee, perhaps a controlled fade. Do any of these words mean anything to you as a golf as a golf novice? Yeah, I'm already starting to think about shots, which means I'm guaranteed whenever this match comes to pass, if and when it does, to lose. Guaranteed. TJ Watt ranked the second best edge rusher in the league. Myles Garrett ranked ahead of him. And this was by the executive and scouting class. So this is a group of people, not fans. It's coaches, scouts, and executives. So GMs. When I hear executives, I think GMs, directors of player personnel. These are people that have to try to stop these guys. These are people that scout these guys, and these are people that make decisions on whether to pay these guys. And they think only Myles Garrett is ahead of TJ Watt. But I the way I read this, those two players seemingly were a cut above the rest. Even the way Parsons was written about was not quite as glowing as either Watt or Garrett. I'll say this, though. I told you I had a thought on this, because then when you get down the rabbit hole, you say, okay, TJ Watt counts more against the cap than any Steelers player this year, and he's worth it. I mean, they haven't won a playoff game with him. I know how it looks when that's on your resume. You could say that somebody's not worth the money that you're paying them if you're not winning playoff games, because that's what's supposed to matter, etc., right? They didn't win a playoff game for Ben's last several years. Most people would not have made the argument until the very end that he was not worth the money. I'll say this about Watt and about their defense writ large. When 8 of your top 10 cap hits are defensive players, you have to be better than even 6th in the league. You can go look it up. Off the top of my head, it's Watt, Minka, Hayward, Ogunjobi, Highsmith, Dante Jackson is in there. I'm forgetting two right now. Queen. And then one more that I can't.
Did you say Hayward?
Holcomb's up there. Holcomb's in there too, actually. Okay, so that's 8. You're spending that much money. They were 6th in the league defensively last year in scoring defense. You've got to be better than that. And my question for you, Donnie, before I throw this out there. Have they felt, now if you go back to scoring defense, because that's what I judge it by, I don't care if you're giving up yards, keep points off the board. 6th in 2023, 10th in 2022, all the way down to 20th in 2021, and then they were 3rd in the league in scoring defense in 2020. Let me ask you this, have they felt like, because I know you think about that 2008 team that won the Super Bowl a lot, that was historically great. Have they felt like a top 10 defense to you for long stretches of football in the last couple of years?
Not really. And I know that there have been, it seemed more so last year, I would say, that the defense bailed them out of some big situations. It's just the 08 defense that we bring up, they're just in the God tier. Like, they're in the all-time
conversation.
Sure, but
like, I guess what I'm trying to do is thread a needle here. Buffalo beats them in the playoffs, and they score 31. I didn't think that was all the defense's fault, but when the offense finally got up off the deck, the defense couldn't get the stop when they needed to, okay?
Yeah, like, we find that in big moments.
They just look like a bunch of guys out there.
When the games are at their largest for them, they sort of crumble.
Can't really rate the Ravens games that they played. They did have a very good game the first time out against them, but the second one, you kind of give them an incomplete grade against a division rival, because, and also that first Ravens game, I was very fond of pointing out that the Ravens played one of the worst offensive games from their pass catchers I've ever seen.
Yeah, they should have won the game by probably 10
two,
plus.
Two or three touchdowns, maybe. Like, I'm just looking at the games and what they gave up, and they didn't give up more than 31, and they gave up 33 times, though. Niners, Texans, Colts, man. And two of those three teams, you chalk it up and say, okay, great quarterback for one, very good quarterback in good system. The other one's the Colts, and you're getting shelled. If you're going to spend this much money, I think you should expect this to be the best defense in football. Not only has it not been number one in scoring defense, I was going back through. I was doing like the anecdotal, the feel of it. Do they ever feel like they're going to take over football games? That happened maybe once or twice last year. I think the game against Green Bay with Love looks better in the rearview mirror because Love became so good. The way they beat up on the Browns in the second game of the season or whatever. Okay, that one, yeah, I get it. That one's a big one, but Watson looked bad pretty much all year. There were just very few times where I felt like I was watching a shutdown team on that side of the football. And they need to be if you're paying this much money to that many guys.
Yeah, I mean, there were plenty of times when its best player and its most expensive player, TJ Watt, took over in moments of games. But I wouldn't say like the entire 11 that were out there were just such a wall that the opposing offense couldn't do anything. Like, there were a lot of bad situations I thought the defense maybe put itself into, and then TJ Watt would make a huge play and get them out of it.
I expect more. Like, there were too many breakdowns. You could chalk it up to injuries, but I expect more. 412-928-9370. Just a little chat about the Steelers defense, since ESPN did poll a bunch of scouts, executives, and coaches who had TJ Watt ranked second best in the league among edge rushers. You can guess, you know who was ahead of him. Vincent, our pal Vincent in Columbus, jumping on the line.
Hey, Chris.
What's up?
Yeah, so I do agree that it should be a top five defense with all we're paying, and I do think we'll get back to just like Minka ball with Minka, TJ just doing his thing. And I did want to say, for like the Myles Garrett Watt debate, does it, like, I know this is kind of like a nerdy thing, but they are technically two different positions. Like, Watt is an outside linebacker, Garrett's a defensive end. And Watt, I don't think he gets enough credit for the coverage he does on a regular basis, because that's not what Garrett's asked to do. I'm like, Watt.
If you wanted to split hairs, though, couldn't you say this? Couldn't you say that Garrett almost exclusively lines up against left tackles, and pretty much anyone who's anyone will tell you that the left tackle is the best offensive lineman on the other team?
Yeah, you could make that argument, too. I just think Watt is the more productive player, like, at the end of the day. Like, when it comes to actually, like, the actual counting stats in the game, I think that matters a lot more. Like, the win rate and pressures can only go so far, and it's like, at that point, you might as well just, like, I made this joke before, but, like, you might as well give a corner credit for deflecting a pass even if the receiver caught it. Like no one's going to want to hear about that at the end, like, your win rate if you didn't make the play.
Well, it is kind of funny that you bring that up as an example, though, because PFF has tried to do that in the opposite sense with quarterbacks. If it's a play where the corner deflects the ball directly into a receiver's hands, like, remember that one AB had against the Chiefs several years ago?
Yeah.
The quarterback does not get credit for that throw on a granular level with PFF, because the ball got tipped and they would consider that a bad throw. Just like if it's a great throw and it goes right through the guy's hands, they'll credit the quarterback and say that's a big-time throw that should have been caught. I get what you're saying, but it's whether we like it or not, it has become obvious. And thanks, man. Always good to hear from Vincent on this show. It has become an award and has become a position. I should say, not just the Defensive Player of the Year. We've all heard everyone here say that it's become the one award that's become an advanced analytics award in the NFL. But that position of edge rusher has absolutely, and pass rusher, become about how often do you win your assignment against the blockers that are deployed against you, to a point where even me, a guy who believes in that stuff, thinks it gets a little over the top. Like, I can even say, I think sometimes the obsession with that, like, how quickly did he defeat blocks? There are times where people say, oh, Myles Garrett defeated his blocks and was all over the play, and it didn't affect the play in the slightest, and I still hear him getting credit for it. And I will admit that does kind of grate on me after a while. Mike Florio is going to join us coming up next. Maybe ask him about how he'd rank edge rushers in the NFL. Still got Aditi Kinkabwala in just under an hour. 5 minutes away from Mike Florio. A lot to get to. Cam Sutton suspension. A Joe Burrow idea that's caught a lot of traction in NFL circles. And we'll ask Mike a few positional questions about the Steelers. Training camp, Donnie. Chipping away at the days on the calendar. What are we, about 2 weeks out here? Just chipping away,
close,
baby.
I think a little bit over 2 weeks.
Chipping away at that training camp countdown here. PM team, and got a lot coming up for you. I'm still thinking about this hypothetical golf match that could take place down the road. Maybe more on that later. I also just saw something, Donnie, that we're going to have to bring up right now with Mike Florio, because it has floored me. Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That's where Mike joins us right now. I'll start with this one, Mike, and it's a dumb one, but it rarely does, like, one of these lifestyles of the rich and famous things drop my jaw to the floor. Reportedly, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce spending approximately $100,000 a day on their transatlantic romance right now. $100,000 a day, bodyguards, flowers, private jets. How is that? I don't care how much money she makes. How is that possible for him?
I'm surprised it's only $100,000 when you factor in all those things. Look, she's got more money than he does by far. I have a feeling that she's footing the bill for security and she's footing the bill for the plane. And he's a kept man at this point. And I think we should all aspire to that outcome.
They said he's spending thousands of dollars a day on flowers. And I got to be honest, your breakdown sounds right. If she's paying for the jet and the security and everything else, and she's filling the jet with Kansas City barbecue, I would agree with you that he's in a pretty good space here, and he's probably not accounting for much of that $100K.
I just wonder at what point you recognize you have so much money, it's impossible to ever even take a dent out of it. It's like the old movie Brewster's Millions from the 80s with Richard Pryor. Like, you couldn't try to spend it all. You couldn't. It's impossible. It would be a full-time job and then some to spend 10% of what she's got.
You know, if they get married, that ends up being a possible TB12 situation where Kelsey could take a big haircut from the Chiefs to keep their window open longer, and he's just sitting back there. You know what? I'll take veteran minimum. I'm still playing at a high level. Give me that vet minimum salary, and let's add some pieces.
You could buy a team, too. Buy a team.
I was going to say the NFL would probably be very happy about that if Taylor Swift decided to buy in on a franchise here soon. To matters a lot more serious here, we now have in Pittsburgh the number 8 games without pay, the Cam Sutton suspension. Based on who, people you were talking to, Mike, was that what you expected to come out of this?
Well, it didn't surprise me. I think at one point we talked about the personal conduct policy, the baseline of 6 games for a domestic violence situation, with the opportunity for that number to go up. And when you look at the affidavit that was in the Tampa Bay Times, some of the specific allegations fell right within the wheelhouse of the aggravating factors. And I think that's why it got pushed to 8 games. So, you know, I think one of the questions here, when the 8 games is concluded after the Giants Monday night game, mm-hmm. they may not take him back. They may decide by then, we're good, we're fine, there's no guaranteed money. They can move on from him if they want to once that suspension expires.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, so I'm glad you brought it up. It made me think, too, that they might have been hoping for a shorter suspension, but that also the optics of it being 8 games, not just they might discover guys who can play between now and then and they don't need him, but that 8 games probably just makes it look a little bit even worse on the Steelers' end because there was no break given by the league here whatsoever.
No, and this is a product of what happened with Ray Rice 10 years ago, where we all knew what he did in that elevator at the casino in Atlantic City. But once we saw it, it changed everything. And I would submit to you that if there was a video of what Cameron Sutton did, Steelers wouldn't have signed him. Nobody would have signed him. He wouldn't be working for anyone right now, wouldn't have a chance with any team. And that's why I was just surprised the Steelers went there. I really was. It doesn't seem like the Steelers kind of thing to do it. A lot of fans, you know, hey, got to support the team. No matter what they do, they can do no wrong. How dare you point that out? But it's kind of hard to have the moral high ground now with the Browns and Deshaun Watson when the Steelers have given safe harbor to Cameron Sutton.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, joining us on the PM team. Speaking of this situation, one thing, when I was talking about it with callers when the news broke a couple of days ago here, it happened during the show, Mike, was I had one caller who hadn't read the story yet just say, well, he's going to appeal this, and I pointed out he waived his right to appeal. Just from that perspective, like the CBA, collective bargaining, players versus, you know, ownership and management in the NFL, what's the rationale for Cam Sutton waiving his appeal at that point?
Well, the reality is the NFL approaches him, the union, his lawyer, and says, here's what we're going to do. We're going to try to suspend you for the whole year. For example, I don't know if that's the case here, but it's like any other situation where you've got two sides. They negotiate a resolution so that they don't have to roll the dice on whatever would happen through the NFL's in-house justice system. And currently there is some degree of independence. There's a retired judge who's been given the assignment, and that person was involved in the Deshaun Watson case 2 years ago. So there is a fact-finding and a threshold decision that's made by somebody who does have independence. So you go to Cameron Sutton and you say, look at these aggravating factors. We're gonna go for a year if you make us go forward with this, but we'll do 8 games. And he agrees to 8 games, waives his appeal rights, and that's it. That's something like that is likely what happened.
I'll move on to something a little less serious, actually a lot less serious. Did you catch wind of Joe Burrow's suggestion about when this thing goes to 18 games, which is an inevitability, what they should do, the NFL? Go 2 bye weeks, one of them is a universal bye, and he said move the Pro Bowl to the middle of the season because he thinks it would goose participation. Your thoughts?
They will never shut down the entire league during the season. I love creativity, but I also am a pragmatist, and the NFL is not going to give up a weekend in the middle of the season of Thursday night, Sunday afternoon, two windows, that big 4:25 p.m. Eastern window, Sunday night, Monday night, whatever else they can cram into the pizza, wherever else they can find more cheese, and they keep finding more and more places to stick that cheese. They're never going to do that. The best they can hope for is two traditional bye weeks on an 18-game slate, 20 weeks in the season. But when they did that back in 1993, there were 28 teams at the time, not 32. The networks hated it because it dilutes the schedule to have two byes spread over 20 weeks instead of one spread over 17, now 18. That's the problem. And really, there are more concentrated games now with 18 weeks and only 1 week off. You go to 20 weeks and 2 weeks off, week in and week out, you may have some days where you're like, eh, none of these games are really any good this weekend. And that's one of the risks of doing two byes. But I think it's time for two byes.
If they do, if and when they get to 18, I should just say when, because we all know it's happening, Mike. I'm not going to be a Pollyanna here and think it's going to stay at 17. Do you think that the NFL will try to claim yet another day on the weekly calendar? I don't know if I've ever asked you this before. If they have designs on trying to grab Tuesdays or something like that for themselves, schedule-wise?
I'm surprised they haven't done more Tuesday and Wednesday since they proved that they can do it. And the Steelers were part of the guinea pig experiment during COVID in moving games around on weekdays. Look, I think here's what will happen. If they do go to 18 and add another bye week, they're going to want to have the Super Bowl on President's Day weekend. Well, the bye week is going to cause them to go back and retake Labor Day weekend. They got away from Labor Day 20, 25 years ago because people are traveling, they're at barbecues, they're at the beach, it's one last big fling before the unofficial end of summer. I think they should go back and take Labor Day anyway, because you know the difference now? Hey, we all got this. We all got this. We can watch it wherever we are. We're going to all be watching football games at the picnic and at the barbecue and at the pool and at the beach. And so, and they could do right out of the gates, Labor Day weekend, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday night, 5 primetime standalone games to start the season. They could do that every year if they start on Labor Day weekend. And I think that if they do the two byes, it's inevitable they'll be back on Labor Day.
Last one, Mike. Have you been at all entranced? You just held up your phone. I'll admit something. I've been watching the Hard Knocks in season in little, very easily digestible bites on my phone when they post blurbs of it, and I have found it more compelling than I thought. Have you been sucked in at all to the the off-season, I guess it would be, Hard Knocks, excuse me?
I love it because they've let way too much stuff into the final cut. The example that's making the rounds today, when they sit down at the scouting combine and have their PR strategy session about what they're going to say about Saquon Barkley. I like it because so many times somebody will say something at a press conference and all the fans are like, well, it must be true. They said it at a press conference. No! No, they're lying to us. It's strategic. Sometimes you have to lie. Sometimes they're just trying to keep their cards close to the vest. They're trying to not piss somebody off, whatever the case may be. But it's been very useful because I'm going to go back to that story. Anytime now there's a controversial issue with the team and the team says something self-serving and predictable at a press conference, I'm going to say, hey, remember what we learned in off-season Hard Knocks. And I mean, there's other issues too. I'm surprised that any team would allow that kind of a look into their internal deliberations when they're trying to figure out what to do. It is not useful to anyone to, number one, have a camera and a microphone there, and number two, put that stuff on TV.
Well, I'm going to continue to hope that it happens. Hope against hope, at least.
Anybody but the Steelers. You don't want the Steelers, folks, to get that assignment.
No, I kind of do, even though I think I know how it would go. Thank you, Mike. We'll talk again next week.
See you, man.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, coming up next. ESPN already ranked the Steelers edge rushers, and by say edge rushers, I mean T.J. Watt ranked number two among the top 10. Alex Highsmith, good enough to be in the already also receiving votes category, excuse me. We've got an interesting little take from an ESPN insider on the Steelers, the offensive side of the ball, that you are going to want to hear coming up next, and it's not necessarily a good one either. By the way, Mike Florio was brought to you by J.P. Roofing and Siding, your hometown roofing expert. Coming up, like I just said, big-time ESPN insider, and I think somebody on this show that we're big fans of, a harsh rating of the Steelers in one area of their offense. You'll find out what that is coming up next.